this in.
Yeah, go ahead. Do you want me to do it? Do you Good morning, counsel. While you're settling in, I'm just going to call the next case. Our next case is case number A24-0650 in the matter of QC training services. Good morning, counsel. As I'm sure you are both aware, you will be given 15 minutes today for each of your arguments, and appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before you begin your argument, please feel free to take a second to adjust the podium to be at a height that you're comfortable. The button is in the middle. It's a little bit hard to find. And then if you would please identify yourself, we're making an audio record today. So if you would please identify yourself and your client for the audio record, it would be much appreciated. With that, counsel for appellant, if you are ready, you may begin your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ross Tenniger. I'm here today on behalf of Realtor RQC Training Services Incorporated. The question before the court today is one of statutory interpretation. We are here following the decision by the Commissioner of the Office of Higher Education that the term private career school, as codified by the legislature in the Private Career School Act, is on its face, is on its face clear and unambiguous, and therefore subject to only one reasonable interpretation. Yet for the commission to reach that determination and finding that the term private career school is clear and unambiguous, the commissioner and OHE must omit from its consideration the very statutory language that creates this ambiguity. Language that gives rise to a second reasonable interpretation, private career school. The omitted language, while not in the defined term private career school itself, is found in another defined term, program, upon which private career school relies. Thus, at the heart of this appeal are the defined terms of a program and a private career school. The Act defines a private career school as meaning, in part, a person who offers or conducts any program at less than an associate's degree level, is not licensed under the Post-Secondary Education Act, and is not exempt from licensure under the Act. At issue here, the most relevant, is a line that says a private career school is a person who offers programs at less than an associate's degree level. Therefore, it is necessary to look at how the Act defines programs in order to determine what subset of persons are captured by that definition for private career schools. And it is in this definition, the definition of a program, but that we find the source of the ambiguity here. The Act defines a program as being a course or a group of courses offered by a private career school. The two definitions, program and private career school, are interdependent. A private career school is defined in part by being a person that offers a program, and a program is defined in part as being courses offered by a private career school. Due to the circularity, which the OHE argues is awkward drafting, the OHE has adopted its own definition for program in its administrative rules, found at 4880.1700 subdivision 4. OHE's administrative definition for program, however, omits a statutory qualifier that a program is limited to courses only offered by private career schools. Instead, the OHE's rule defines program as including any course, including any courses offered by any non-degree granting school, not just private career schools. This brings us to the first of two interpretations. OHE considers any non-degree granting entity that offers any courses at all to be private career schools, regardless on if those courses are designed to provide education geared to providing students with entry-level employment, which is a minimum requirement for licensure under the Act.
But counsel, if the statute is ambiguous and the agency underwent rulemaking to interpret the statute, why isn't the interpretation provided in the rule, why don't we give deference to that when that went through a public rulemaking process where people had an opportunity to challenge the agency's interpretation of the rule, to say that this was ambiguous, they were interpreting it wrong? I mean, it seems to me like at the point where you're saying the statute is ambiguous, but there is a rule interpreting that ambiguity, that we're in the land of agency deference to the rulemaking process that has already been conducted.
QC argues, or their position is, that the rule adopted by the agency in this case undoes or circumvents of the 2015 amendment by the legislature, which specifically amended the statute for the definition for program to include private career school. It previously was defined by program was only used defined, excuse me, program was defined by courses, the groups of courses offered by schools.
But then don't you have to challenge the rule and not the underlying decision applying the rule?
We're arguing that the interpretation overall is what we're arguing that the interpretation of the program and private career school together combined creates ambiguity in the statute that allows two separate entities to, or excuse me, that allows two separate interpretations to be held.
Is it your position that a circular definition, or you said it creates a circularity, is that in and of itself a problem here? Is that what you're saying makes it ambiguous?
We're not saying that that is what necessarily in and of itself makes ambiguity, but the fact that OHE removes certain aspects of the statutory definition, the statutory terms, to reach a determination or to reach an interpretation of the statute, compared to, their use of the word school, and as they argued in their briefing, they equate that essentially being any non-degree granting entity in the state, which is an expansion on what the legislature did by defining program to be limited to courses offered by actual private career schools. So the ambiguity leads to the OHE kind of what OHE attempts to clarify that ambiguity in the statute by removing the statutory qualifier of private career, where QC, on the other hand, argues that the limitation of what is considered a program, only those courses offered by actual private career schools, cannot simply just be omitted from the actual defined term itself. And then the rule that OHE is referring to or adopted to clarify that is invalid then as a result. The language offered by a private career school is a limitation that preserves the boundary between any non-degree granting entity and private career schools, and ensuring that those entities offering courses, ensuring that the entities offering courses not designed for preparing students for entry-level positions is the purpose of the Act as a whole. And so I guess the argument is then the two interpretations from a private career school hinge on how the program is defined and interpreted. Removing the qualifier from private career from what constitutes a program expands the scope of the private career school term to any non-degree granting entity offering any courses at less than associate degree level, which is in contrast to the plain meaning of the full definition of the statutory defined term program, limiting programs to include only courses offered by a private career school.
Do you agree that the meaning of a word depends also on how it is being used, and that we should be looking at the surrounding provisions and the fact that project is used multiple times in other parts of the statute?
I'm sorry, you cut out the last.
Would you agree that the meaning of a word depends on how it is being used, and that we should look at the surrounding language, the rest of the statute, in order to determine whether it's ambiguous or unambiguous.
Yes, and to the extent that you should look at the black letter or the law, the defined term itself, to determine if it's susceptible to more than one reasonable meaning. And I think when OHE has to omit part of that defined term to reach a meaning that's not, as it says, awkward, that creates, allows the other interpretation that the statute, or excuse me, the legislature specifically included private career school in that statute for a reason. It had an opportunity, or excuse me, in 2015 when it amended the statute, it specifically left or included that language, both in changing from school to private career school, and also in program from school to private career school, referring to courses. It could have changed it. It could have used different language. It could have used any non-degree granting entity. It could have used person instead of private career school in the definition of program. But the inclusion of that defined term creates a reasonable interpretation that the legislature wanted that limitation on there, not just any non-degree granting entity. And I guess going to the broader question here, when you look at, you know, if you can see that there's ambiguity in the statute, if you can see that there's multiple interpretations, and you look at like the minimum requirements, for example, of the act. One of those minimum requirements is that each occupational course or program offered by a private career school provides education and adequate preparation to enrolled students for entry-level positions in the occupation for which prepared. That's found in 136A, 822. And again, even later on, the act prohibits. Not only do they require programs to adequately prepare students for entry-level employment, but it also prohibits private career schools from even enrolling students who are unlikely to qualify for entry-level work upon graduation. So together, when you consider the expressed language by the legislature in defining programs to be limited to those courses only offered by private career schools, when you consider that OHE has to omit that portion to reach its interpretation, and when you consider the act as a whole and the it's ubiquitous with regulations specifically focused on career-oriented programs, career entry positions, allowing students to enroll in these courses and be able to gain gainful employment in a set career. The entire act is focused on that. Those are the minimum requirements. And that's why when you look at those the defined terms, you can't just omit the private career school part from the from program. I also think that, and if you look at the legislative history, that amendment in 2015, redefining the term school to a private career school, the definition of a program was also revised to specify offerings by private career school. And you can't just omit that or reverse that through the administrative rules. It'd be one thing if they added different things, but they're expanding the scope of it. Because again, program does not refer to any person that's offering courses or any entity that's offering courses. It's referring specifically to private career schools. And that's the, I mean, that's what the entire argument is based on. That language was included. It was necessary by the legislature, and it leads to multiple conclusion or multiple interpretations if as the OIG omits it from their interpretation.
So, would you say that your argument requires that we look at the legislative history then?
Absolutely, I would. I think if you look at the history of the Act and the opportunities to essentially do what OHE is doing, the legislature had the opportunity to express it, chose not to. And I think that the limiting language in program has to be recognized, or at least lends itself to being a reasonable interpretation that was on purpose. And once you do that, once you have that ambiguity, once you have those two interpretations, and you then you start looking at the act as a whole to give purpose and intent to everything,
But
then.
don't we also have to give deference to the agency's interpretation of the statute because they went through the rulemaking process?
The deference is not required in this case if it, that it's, if their rule.
When a statute is ambiguous, we give deference to the administrative interpretation of the relevant statute by the state agency if this agency is charged with the responsibility of applying the statute. Why, at the point that we determine that this statute is ambiguous, why don't we have to give deference to the agency's interpretation of that ambiguous statute?
I'd point you to Minnesota's Voters Alliance, the Office of Minnesota Secretary of State, when there was a similar situation where the statute, excuse me, the rule expanded the scope of the statutory regulation or the statute itself.
Well, I don't think giving deference to the agency's interpretation doesn't necessarily preclude the court from finding that the rule is that the rule is not in compliance with the statute. I think that it just means that there's an additional hurdle that you have to overcome, which is the deference that we give to the agency charged with administering this particular statute. And I guess I just want to know if you disagree with me on that point of law.
I would disagree, Your Honor, respectfully, to the extent that if the regulation, even if they're tasked with enforcing these statutes and the act, they can't expand the powers and the statutory language of the defined terms by
Well,
kind of
one, but
reversing.
once they've gone through the rulemaking process, the very public and elaborate and long process of creating a rule, where the public has an opportunity to engage in that process, then we tend to give deference to those rules, because they've already undergone the scrutiny of public comment, and that's why we give deference to the agencies when they go through the actual rulemaking process of interpreting a statute, especially if the statute is ambiguous. And I guess I just want to I want do you disagree with that principle? And I understand that the argument that you are making is even if you give deference to the statute, or even if you give deference to that interpretation is unreasonable, is how I would understand your argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that concludes my time. Thank you.
And you will have 5 minutes for a rebuttal. Sorry for cutting you off at the end there. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Alex Sloan. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, or OHE, in this matter. OHE wins in this case because the legislature provided a broad definition of the term private career school that unambiguously includes QC training. I'd like to begin my presentation by just clearing up a couple of things from the initial argument. So there was some discussion of the 2015 amendment and the switch from the term school to private career school. And I just want to go over what that change was because like private career school in the current act, school was a defined term. And the definition is almost identical to private career school. There are a few grammatical changes. They went from any person to a person. They removed the language within or outside of the state, which I don't think has any effect here. QC training is within the state. And the only other substantive changes, it used to be duplicated. A school means any person with or without outside the state who maintains, advertises, administers, solicits for, or conducts any program at less than an associate degree level and is not registered as a private institution under the relevant sections and is not specifically exempted by the former exemption statutes. And then it repeats, a school is also means a person within or without outside of the state who maintains, advertises, administers, solicits for, or conducts any program at less than an associate degree level is not registered as a private institution pursuant to, again, the relevant sections, and uses the term college, institute, academy, or university in its name. So the only substantive change there is that even if one, presumably even if one were exempted under the exemption statutes, but used the term college, institute, academy, or university in its name, it would still be defined as a school. Again,
Council, is there anything, as I understand it, OHE administers more than one act.
yes.
And so, as I understand it, that change may well have been because they were trying to distinguish between schools under the Minnesota Private and Out-of-State Public Post-Secondary Education Act and the act at issue here. Is there anything in the legislative history that speaks to that?
I think it was, that dichotomy was the case before and after the 2015 amendments. Mm-hmm. So when I said not registered as a private institution under, I didn't actually give the sections, but sections 136A.61 to 136A.71, that's the private and out-of-state public post-secondary act. So, you know, the act before and after 2015 already carved out, if you fit the definition otherwise, but you are subject to the higher degree of oversight of needing to be registered as a degree granting institution, you know, so even if a degree granting institution has some programs that are not degree oriented, that they wouldn't need to be doubly regulated by OHE. They can
it
be
seemed,
registered.
It seemed to me that there was a distinction that was being drawn between a school and a private career school, just to specify that there were different terms, but the definition ultimately, essentially, substantively remained the same.
Correct. Sorry.
Private career school.
Sorry, I misunderstood the thrust of your question, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Yes, agree completely. I think it was a change of terminology with the same identical substance.
Yes. Okay. And do we even get there, though? I mean, do we even reach legislative history?
I don't think so, because we would only do that if the act as it's currently written were ambiguous, and not just ambiguous. Ambiguity in a given case has to be on the facts present. And so, you know, whether or not the act is 100% clear as to who is included and excluded in the abstract, it definitely includes QC training. You know, that the broad definition given for private career school definitely includes QC. It's unambiguous as applied to QC, and therefore there's no need to go beyond the plain language, the unambiguous text of the language, and that really does dispose of this case.
But do you disagree that even if we found the statute was ambiguous, that the agency's interpretation of the statute would be entitled to deference?
I agree with that. I also, before you know, at some point during my presentation, wanted to speak a little bit about if the court were to reach canons. I think that the most compelling argument on interpretive canons is has to do with the exemptions statute, which is 136A.833. So QC's theory seems to be maybe private career school means traditional vocational school. It's not found in the text of the definition, but that seems to be the theory. And if we were to look at those exemptions, though, there are a number of those exemptions that don't have anything to do with the traditional vocational schools. We've got an exemption for essentially CLEs and equivalent types of trainings, you know, CMEs for medical field. We've got an exemption for acting classes. We've got, and I think most relevant in this case, we have an exemption that perfectly describes what I understand to be the vast majority of QC's business, which is going to other businesses and training their employees to do their jobs better. It's specifically exempted in the statute. And if QC, my understanding is QC used to have that as 100% of their business, and they were entitled to that exemption before. And only because they have started accepting a small amount of business directly from the trainees are they subject to licensure. So as far as being within the definition of private career school, other than being entitled to the exemption, that entire exemption would be surplusage if it fell outside of the definition of private career school, as QC argues. So I think that's the most compelling canon argument should the court reach that point in its analysis.
In terms of how far we need to go in our analysis, I'd like you to speak to whether or not we actually need to look at the rule that has been cited here, whether that ultimately is outside the scope of the analysis here.
I think it's outside the scope of the analysis. So, you know, OHI's principal argument is, and this was the commissioner's determination, was the text of the statute is unambiguous. The definition of private career school unambiguously includes QC, full stop. You know, I think there, I don't recall whether there were, I think there was maybe some attention given to alternative arguments in at least the recommendation, which was, you know, I guess, adopted by the commissioner. So there may have been some discussion, but that I think is that disposes of the case. Now there are, I think, good alternative arguments should the court find ambiguity. I think, you know, first and foremost, well, we have a rule that that also has the force and effect of law, that to the extent circularity equals ambiguity, which I don't think is the case, at least on these facts, well, the rule disposes of the circularity. You know, if the statute is ambiguous because the two terms reference each other, well, we have an agency interpretation of what a program is, that has no circularity with the statutory definition of what a private career school is. So I think that's another way to dispose of it. And then there's the canons piece as well. And so I think I'd like to point out that I don't think QC ever identifies an alternative meaning with any specificity that's anything that's tied to the text of the definitions. And I think that's telling. I think what we have is, well, maybe private career school means vocational school. But it's not tied to the text of the definitions. It's really tied to the defined term itself. And, you know, because of the point that I made a little bit earlier about it needing to be a definition that leads to a different outcome on these facts, and I don't think QC has done that, we don't have ambiguity. Because we don't have ambiguity, I don't think need to go beyond the plain text of the statute. With that, Your Honors, I will end my presentation unless there are further questions.
I don't see any other questions. Thank you, Counsel. Right.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for Appellant, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, excuse me. First, I want to address the fact that QC's business has not changed since it began in 2015, and that's part of one of the issues that it has with this. Once in 2017, it learned that OHE believed it was a private career school. While it disagreed with that evaluation, it was told it would qualify for exemption, so it applied and got it. Despite the business not changing whatsoever, and recently in 2022, that exemption was now denied, which is what led us to here. It wasn't that their business has changed or anything else. But I guess more importantly, to address the question about the exemptions, the exemptions in the Act are divided into kind of two broad categories. You have complete school exemptions for private career schools, post-secondaries, educations, and then you also have program-specific exemptions. The existence of these exemptions, however, does not dictate who falls under the Act. The Act's primary definition of a private career school still stands, and the exemptions only apply when specific qualifying criteria are met. The exemptions serve to carve out exceptions, but they do not reshape or redefine the Act, the Act scope. Determining which schools falls under the Act remains based on whether they meet the defined terms, regardless of the exemptions in place. And going back, I guess, then to address the fact that the argument that QC hasn't addressed a definition for a private career school, I think we certainly have. And I think the ambiguity that is removed by the removing portions of the definition of program, when you look at the act as a whole, the minimum requirements require that all programs provide the courses that are designed to provide education, preparing students to enroll, to be able to go out and gain an entry-level employment. And we believe that's how the private career school definition should be defined, to be limited to actual private career schools that focus on career-oriented paths. And that's why when you look at the exemptions, some of those exemptions are included because none of those courses, for example, CLEs or some of the vocational stuff, are designed to provide entry-level positions. And since licensed private career schools, for example, have to pay licensing fees for each program they have, some of those programs that might not qualify as private career programs are exempt, and they don't have to pay the licensing fee because of that. I think as a whole, when you look at the act, when you look at the regulations, when you look at the requirements, everything is focusing on being designed to prepare students for entry-level positions.
How do you tie your proposed interpretation to the ambiguity that exists in the statute?
The fact that private career school is included in the term program was for a reason. It wasn't arbitrary, and it's a narrower term than just any non-degree granting entity. It's the fact that the legislature specifically chose to do that, and then the whole act as a whole is designed to prepare students for entry-level position, gives rise to that interpretation, Your Honor. Well, that said, I don't have nothing further unless you guys have questions.
I see no further questions. Thank you to both counsel for your argument today. This case has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion in the time prescribed by statute. Thank you.